You're listening to Packers Talk Network. Packers Talk.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
The Green Bay Packers spent much of the afternoon Sunday playing with fire over and over and over. And the result? They won anyways. Wait, they won? And with that, I'd like to welcome you to this week's episode of Lemps Talk and Pack. I am your host, Chris Lempsis, coming to you not from my basement Packer room in my home in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, but rather the bedroom of my home in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We had some heavy biblical rains late last week that kind of flooded my basement. It's on the mend. We're fixing it. It's mostly the carpets that kind of took it on the chin. Not all the carpets, just parts of it. But, yeah, hopefully that'll be fixed soon and I'll be able to get back there next week. But for now, I'm coming to you from the bedroom, and I'm not going to lie, it's a little weird. But like I said last season after the Jets game right before Christmas, I think it was, when I had to do the podcast from a hotel room in Marquette, if you've ever questioned my dedication to doing the show, question it no more. Anywho, yes, as stated in the open, the Packers somehow, some way, pulled out a 21-16 win over the hated, extremely hated, I should say, Minnesota Vikings on Sunday at Lambeau Field, a day in which the Packers remembered the late, great Bart Starr, rest in peace to a legend, to improve their record to 2-0 on the season. They are also, of course, 2-0 in the division, which is always huge. Also in first place, which, yeah, it's week two, but that's always fun to say, right? Especially after the last couple of years. I want to start out with a tweet from the account Packers History, at Historic Packers. I've mentioned them before on the show. They are a must-follow if you're a Packer fan on Twitter. You have to follow them. Had Minnesota completed their rally, it would have been tied for the second-largest blown lead in Packer history. The largest was 22 points, which happened October 12, 1952. Against the Rams at Old City Stadium. Sure a lot of you remember that one. All right, and thanks to everyone tuning in on my still somewhat new home, Packers Talk Net, my new old home, or my old new home? I don't know. Something like that. Now, for the Podbean hardcores, I do want to point out my subscription is almost up. I'm not really sure if I'm going to renew it. So this actually might be the last episode on Podbean. From now on, you might have to just listen to Packers Talk Net for the show, and I'm going to try to get it up on iTunes and stuff too, even if the Podbean account goes away. I'll try to keep the iTunes thing going. I'll keep you guys posted. I should know more on that pretty soon. And I didn't mention this last week. If you don't follow In the Fun and Games on Twitter, LempsMKE at It's Just Chris Now, and the Facebook account is still Old Bag of Donuts. I tried changing the name, but Facebook's being bastards about it, as they are about pretty much everything. So, I don't know, it may just be Old Bag of Donuts, but I'm going to keep that going and keep posting the pods. I'm going to try to get stuff up there, too, when I get time. All right, now that we've got all the obligatory shameless self-promotion out of the way, let's talk about the game. The story of this game, really, to me, was how many times each team shot themselves in the foot. I used a different word. I didn't say foot on Twitter. I said a certain part of the male anatomy on Twitter, but I'm going to keep it clean here. So, we'll say foot. In almost every conceivable way. Costly penalties, missed field goals, poor coaching decisions, poor decisions from individual players. This game had it all. If you like mental boners, holy shit, did this game have it all. And of course, we'll be discussing all of those mistakes as we go on here. And while I'm sure the offensive struggles after the first quarter are going to be what a lot of people focus on this week, and don't worry, we're going to get to that in a bit, they won. So let's start positive. I like to, you know, your old pal Chris, I like to keep it positive. You might not know that if you follow me on Twitter, because I do seem like a negative bastard, but you know what? I am positive. So let's point to why they won, which is, again, the effort of Mike Pettine's guys on the defense. Okay, so Dalvin Cook had a monster day, right? 191 total yards on 25 touches. The majority of that, 154 yards of it, to be exact, came on the ground, course, including his 75-yard touchdown run. And, you know, hats off to Cook. He had an impressive, it was an impressive as hell effort. I mean, that dude is a bull. Speed, strength, vision. I mean, the guy has it all. Great effort from his offensive line in terms of the run blocking, too. But Cook, I mean, he was fantastic. You gotta give it up. Other than that, the defense really, if you look at it, kind of only gave up two other plays that ended up hurting them. The 61-yard reception by DeHaan's son, Chad Beebe. Just quick pause. I'm old enough now. I'm going to be 38 next month. I'm old enough now where guys I watched growing up, their kids are playing. That's always a weird as hell moment. If you're young, you don't get it. You will. If you're older and you're listening to it, you probably know what I'm talking about. For me, I'm just sort of experiencing this as a fan the last couple of years. And it's still very strange to me. And then, so there was that play. And then the 45-yard touchdown pass to Stephon Diggs early in the third quarter. But of course, Vikings got a Viking, right? So really, they ended up hurting them. Even though those were two big plays, they ended up hurting themselves following both those moments. Which is just, it's just classic Vikings. Of course, the offensive pass interference call on Cook. A couple plays after the BB catch, wiped out a touchdown by Diggs. That was late in the first half. And then Diggs, why did he do this? Moronically, taking his helmet off after his touchdown catch? And, like, yelling at the fans, like, what was it? Like, dude, you know you can't take your helmet off. What a dope. And that, of course, drew an unsportsmanlike penalty, which ended up backing the PAT up to, like, was it 48 yards, I think? 47, 48 yards? And that was blocked. Dan Bailey's PAT. Bailey also missed a field goal early in the game. Because apparently being the Vikings field goal kicker is cursed. It's like, so I'm a Detroit Tigers fan. It's been a great season. So much fun. Thanks for asking. And for years and years, it was their closer position. Didn't matter what they did, who they put in there. It was just doomed. It was just a doomed position. It feels that way being the Vikings kicker. This is actually more, obviously, is more fun for me than the baseball version of having a cursed position, which sucks. Yeah, so the rest of the, but you know what? The rest of the day, really, the defense came to play. I thought the pressure was fairly consistent, even though they were getting more and more gas as the game went on. And even though they did only end up with the one sack, I thought, you know, they were doing a pretty good job getting after Cousins. The coverage was pretty solid throughout. I mean, like, even the Diggs touchdown, Jair was right on it. He just, I guess he told reporters after the game he lost it in the sun. But, I mean, he made a few other big plays, so I'm not going to kill him for that. I doubt he'll make that mistake again. I think he said he lost it in the sun, so that happens. And then most importantly, they came up with turnovers. It wasn't just Jair in the coverage, too. I mean, I thought the DBs as a whole covered pretty well. But most importantly, they came up with the turnovers. Four turnovers, to be exact. One, two, three, four turnovers. When's the last time? You know, I thought about looking up when the last time that happened. And I just figured I'd end up being depressed, so I didn't want to. Because, my God, it feels like it's been forever. And then, obviously, none of those turnovers was bigger than Kevin King's fantastic, incredible interception on a first and, was it first and goal, I think? Second and goal? It was second and goal, I think. Desperation heave from Kirk. Somehow I make $27.5 million in base salary this year, Cousins. To Diggs in the corner of the end zone. What a gigantic play again by King, who is not a bust. I'm going to say this every week. He is not a bust. He just needs to stay healthy, but he is not. But he's a good. He's got a lot of talent, a ton of talent. It was great. Wow. It was so impressive to see him come down with that ball. You know, the defense and really the team as a whole was on the ropes. The Vikings were just running the ball down Green Bay's throat. And someone, anyone, needed to come up with a play. And Kevin King did. I mean, the decision by Cousins was terrible. But still, again, it was a great play. If he stays healthy, I love where Kevin King is heading. He's definitely trending up. He's going to be a really good play. I think him and Jair could be a really great cornerback tandem for at least, you know, a while, a few years to come anyway. And here's the biggest thing about that pick. I was texting with a friend about this after the game. It doesn't feel like anybody would have made that play last year. Like, it feels like the defense would have just wilted in that spot and given up a touchdown. Maybe not on that play, but feels like they wouldn't have come up with the turnover. And then the Vikings would have gone back to what was working on that drive and just ran the ball down their throat, most likely, and scored. But today, someone did come up with that big play when it was needed. This defense, it's only 2 weeks in, but they seem to have that. I don't know. It's hard to say what it is. Is it killer instinct, maybe? Ability to ratchet up their play when it matters most? Whatever you want to call it. They have it, and it is really, it's incredibly exciting. I want to get to a tweet here from one of the listeners, Justin Cornwell. At Justin A. Cornwell says, Kirk Cousins has been a punching bag for most of the league in recent years, but always put up huge numbers and wins against the Packers. How gratifying does it feel to have a defense that turned him into the Cousins the rest of the NFL has always seen? I had that tweet go first because that is an A-freaking-plus tweet from Justin. How gratifying is it? It's incredibly gratifying because you would watch him. I mean, well, going back to his days in Washington, I think he had 3 starts. I think this is his 4th start against the Packers, and he just gashed him. He just tore us up. So today to see him go 14 of 32, 230 yards, a touchdown, 2 picks, put up a 52.9 rating. I mean, yeah, it's incredibly gratifying. I feel like I understand how the rest of the world lives now. Okay, so what else? Kenny Clark, going back to the turnovers now, Kenny Clark had a forced fumble on a sack. Cousins actually had fumbled on the scramble the play before, but Minnie got it back. So it was funny to see him fumble on the very next play. It was recovered by Dean Lowry. Preston Smith came up with a nice interception after a really nice pass breakup by the rookie Darnell Savage, who redeemed himself nicely after he was that long Cook touchdown. That was ugly from him. Someone on Twitter said that was his welcome to the NFL moment. That was. It really was. But you know what? He kept his head in the game, kept his wits about him, and came back and made a big play. That was huge. That kid's going to be a stud. I can't tell you how good I feel about Darnell Savage. I don't feel great about this, though. This is from Bill Huber, at Bill Huber SI, was in the locker room after the game. A reporter said, not only was Raven Green injured today, but Darnell Savage walked out of the locker room in a boot. Could be merely precautionary. Who knows? God, I freaking hope it's merely precautionary because you'd hate to lose him at this point so early in the season. Because I think the world of that kid, I think he's going to be really good. And then the final turnover came on a quote-unquote fumble by Diggs. I'm going to call it, put in quotes, because, I mean, that was on the desperation hook and ladder attempt. It was recovered by Tremont Williams, but they all count as turnovers, right? So that was the 4th. And boy, howdy, do the Packers need that type of effort on defense. Because the offense, after a gangbusters first quarter that had yours truly, your old pal Chris, breaking out Limp Bizkit gifts, right? Keep rolling. When it was 21-0, I was like, I'm breaking out the Limp Bizkit gif. I gotta. Throwing it back to 99 or 2000 when I was in high school. And I don't do that unless I think it's warranted. I'm not going to break out a Limp Bizkit gif on you people unless it's warranted. And I thought it was. Of course, after that, the offense sucked. So could you say Limp Bizkit cursed them? Probably. Will I think twice about posting a Limp Bizkit? Yeah, probably I will, actually. Jesus, where do I even start here with the offense? Should I go with the good or the ugly? I guess let's go with the ugly, and then we can get to the part where it's fun, right? You wade through the crap, and then we get to the fun stuff. And the protection seemed to get worse and worse as the game went on. That was a huge problem. The pass catcher's collective ability to get open got worse as the game went on. I don't know if that's play calling or lack of talent. It's probably some combination of both. Maybe not lack of talent, but still young talent, like especially guys like MVS. And you got to give the Vikings defense credit, right? I mean, that's a talented, loaded group. I mean, Griffin, Joseph, Hunter, Kendricks, Smith, Rhodes. Smith particularly was a real pain in the ass today. That guy's tough to play against. But, I mean, they all made plays at various times. I mean, that group was just... I mean, the first quarter was awesome, but you just kind of felt like that group was too good and too talented to keep playing like that. They weren't going to play 4 quarters that way. I didn't think that they would force Green Bay into the tank like they did. But I didn't think the Packers were going to, like, score 42 points or something like that. No, that seemed kind of unlikely. Again, I give the Vikings defense credit. You got to give them credit for that, right? But there's some things that they really didn't have anything to do with as far as offense. Mostly the play calling. I thought that was suspect, especially in regards to the run game. They got too far away from it, particularly in the second half, particularly with regards to, I'm going to call him star running back because I think he is, Aaron Jones. Here's a fun stat comparison for you guys. My nerdery paid off. First half, 14 carries, 63 yards, and a score. Second half, only ran the ball 9 times. Yet he still racked up 53 yards. So 5 less carries in the first half, but only 10 less yards. Simply put, he needed to get the ball more. Especially when you consider Green Bay had a 9-plus minute advantage in time of possession at the half. Like, you've got such an advantage. You've already kept that defense on the field for such a long time in the first 30 minutes. Keep pounding the ball. It's a talented defense. You got to wear them out, man. And that just didn't happen. What a stud Jones is, though, huh? 150 total yards rushing and receiving. 116 on the ground, 34 receiving. And again, the aforementioned touchdown on 27 touches. I don't want to trash. I'm going to try not to trash Mike McCarthy too much. But there's just no way he would have put the ball in his hands that much today. Even if I think Matt LaFleur could have done it more, there's just no way Mike McCarthy would have allowed Jones to touch the ball that much. I don't see it, you know? So that's a positive. The other coaching play calling decision I absolutely despised was going for it on 4th and 1 at the Minnesota 25 late in the half, the first half. You just came up with a turnover on the Smith interception that we just talked about. You're nearing halftime. You're up 14 points. Take the field goal. Take the 3 points, man. I mean, I know it seems like a great idea to go for it and try to snuff them out. But you're already up, again, 14. Just keep pushing that advantage higher and higher. You know what I mean? Now, you get it to 24-7. Now they're going to the locker room. God, we're down 3 scores. And I just feel like, although I've never played in the NFL, I feel like being down 3 scores is just, I don't know. I feel like it's so much more daunting for a team than being down 2. Maybe it's not. It's just me, but that's the way I would think it would be. I mean, admit it. How many times did you talk about that moment as the game went on? Especially in that fourth quarter when it looked bleak and they were only up 5. How many times? If you're like me, it was a lot. I kept going, Jesus, if they just had those 3 points, it'd still be an 8-point game. The worst the Vikings could do was tie it and force overtime. Especially as they were driving down the field on the series that ended in the Kevin King interception. I was going, if they just kicked that field goal. I hated it. I know some people probably, I hated it. Because, they went for it. They didn't get it. And then as a result of the BB catch, the aforementioned BB catch, they ended up with more points. And the only reason things weren't worse is because of the offensive pass interference call on Cook. But as I said last week, there are things Matt LaFleur is only going to learn by going through them. And by going through them, I mean failing at them. And this was a failure. So hopefully it was a learning lesson. And luckily it was one that didn't end up hurting him too much. So that's always good, right? And then they left points on the table in the second quarter as a result of Geronimo Allison's fumble at the Minnesota 28 on the drive after Cook's 75-yard scoring run. So 2 moments that could have ended up killing Green Bay, really. I mean, that's, you think at least it's 6 points. Imagine if they'd had those 6 points in that fourth quarter and it was 27-16. How much better would you have felt? How much less pressure would there have been on the team as a result, you know? So there's definitely, you add that all up, there's a lot of sloppiness on the offense. It's got to get fixed, and it's got to get fixed quick. Now, having said all that, holy hell, what a great start from that group. As the Packers hit pay dirt on each of their first 3 possessions. This is where you're hanging your hat if you're hoping for big things from this offense, right? The protection was great. Rodgers seemed totally comfortable, totally locked in. The receivers were just running free all over the joint. That was awesome. Most notably, of course, is the star, the man, Devontae Adams. After being almost completely shut down by the Bears last week, he got his in that first half, racking up 5 catches for 87 yards. He ended up with 7 grabs for 106 on the day. So a nice bounce back effort for him. Not that I was ever really concerned. That dude is simply too good and too fully in his prime to hold down for long. So it's great to see he and Aaron Jones get back on track after a tough week 1, where again, like I talked about last week, it was clear the Bears were taking out Adams, we're taking out Jones, what else you got? So it was nice to see that those guys, not that Minnesota, I'm sure Minnesota was trying that too, but you could just see they're too good collectively, the two of them, to hold down for too long. I mean, they're Green Bay's 2 offensive horses other than Aaron Rodgers, so they're going to be leading the way. And maybe these younger guys get going, but no matter what, It's going to be Rodgers, Jones, and Adams. That's the trio. And Allison, yeah, he did kill that drive by fumbling in the second quarter, but he also came down with a nice 12-yard touchdown catch that made the score 14-0. Nice to see him go up and come down with it. So that's positive. Quick aside, where's Jake Kumerow? I mean, with the wide receiver seemingly having a hard time getting open, especially as the game went on, it might have been good to get Kumerow in there more. That seems to be his knack. He really seems to be great at getting separation from corners. I feel like he should get more run. And no, I didn't go to Whitewater, but I'm not saying that because I'm an alum, but I do. That just seems to be his knack. I think he should get more play, but I digress. So yeah, even though the last three quarters sucked on ice, copyright Frank Reynolds, you have to say it was a positive step overall for the offense. I mean, last week they really only had the one good drive, right? That ended up in the Graham touchdown. Today they had one good quarter. So that's progress. It's moving at a glacial pace, but it's progress. I got this from Ryan Wood from the Green Bay Press Gazette. Saw his tweet. Rodgers was 9 of 10, 134 yards and two scores in that first quarter. That's great. I mean, he was lethal. So you can see him starting to find his way in the offense. You know, he was only 13 of 24 for 75. Holy Christ. 75 yards the rest of the way. So yeah, you can see again, it's going to take time, but it's progress. It's getting there. You can see that first quarter, you could see like, oh, is this what this offense could be? Oh God. Okay. I'm in. Sign me up. Couple of more listener tweets. The original Rand Man at RandMan71. After a promising showing in week one, the tight ends virtually disappeared in a good or meaningful way. And for the love of the football gods, can we please discontinue Jimmy Graham's uselessness at blocking? Hashtag please. Yeah, it was a tough day for Jimmy. I don't even think he had a catch, did he, right? Wasn't it goose? It was goose eggs for Jimmy? Yeah. Targeted twice, no catches, no yards. I mean, that's not great. You know, and they didn't get Tanya involved. They didn't get Lewis involved after last week. Both those guys, you know, made plays and it didn't happen today. I don't know. I guess I don't really know what the role of the tight end is exactly in this offense. So, because we're still sort of all learning what this offense is together as fans. But yeah, I mean, that was McCarthy's big thing last year, right? Was he kept Graham in line as a blocker and we all hated it. And he's just not a blocker. It's not Jimmy Graham's thing. It never has been. So yeah, that probably should stop. Another listener tweet here from Philip Voss at P_Voss. Lots to build on. If the O had been completely stifled, I would be concerned. But that first quarter gives you plenty to build on. The D is for real. You are absolutely correct, Philip. I agree with all that. Yeah, I mean, that's the offense has more positives to build off of. Last week, one good drive. Today, one good quarter. It's getting there. So you got to be, I'm sure that there's, it's always better, I think, to look at that stuff after a win, right? And the D is for real. I mean, I don't, you know, they held the Vikings to 16 points. It's a good offense. This is the group, you know? This is the defense I think we've always wanted. And it's exciting to think that they could get better if Rashawn Gary gets on the field and starts making an impact. You know, that hasn't really happened. I mean, they can get better still. That's really exciting. So yeah, you know, in the end, it was a wild, exciting, frustrating, wonderful, beautiful, ugly, infuriating day for the Packers, but a day in which they came out victorious. And that is always great, especially against the Vikings. I got to talk about the Vikings quick here. I really hate them. I do. I hate the Vikings. So I'm in a weird position. I'm in an interesting spot. I grew up in the Upper Peninsula, right? The first 23 years of my life, plus a year after college. I grew up in Marquette, which is like right in the middle of the UP, upper middle, around Lake Superior. Marquette is basically 50-50 Packers-Lions. So I would say it's fairly heavy Lions territory, right? So I grew up with that. And then I went to college in Minnesota. And then I ended up spending a couple years there after college, which is obviously Minneapolis, the heart of Viking territory. And then now I live in Milwaukee, which is my first time actually living in Wisconsin, but like I'm an hour and a half from Chicago, so there's a lot of Bears fans. So I have experience in living in, I guess you'd call it enemy territory for all three of the teams in this division. And I hate the Vikings the most. I know some people will say the Bears are the biggest rival. For some, it might be the Cowboys. But for me, it's the purple. I hate them, man. I mean, I could go into all the reasons why, but I just, I hate them. I used to, it's funny, I used to wear my Favre jersey. The comments I would get, people flipping me off, driving by. I had a guy yell F you in my face at a bar once for wearing it. And then Favre ended up playing for the Vikings, which was just hysterical in hindsight. But yeah, I just, I don't know. I think Vikings fans are the nastiest fans of the three teams in this division. I don't know about Cowboys fans. Or like some might say the Seahawks for a while there too. But for me, it's always going to be the Vikings. They're always a team I want to beat the most as a fan. Always, and probably forever, it will be that way. Even if I live in Wisconsin my whole life, down here in Bears, somewhat Bears territory, it's always the Vikings. Screw them. And you stole that chant from Iceland soccer team. What else? I got to credit the Lambeau crowd. They were great. If you were at the game today, give yourself a pat on the back. You were loud. I heard you. I could hear you on TV. It felt loud. And based on the Twitter feedback I was seeing and from people I knew, friends of mine and stuff at the game, they were saying it was loud. Lambeau was rocking. That was a big thing this week. People, why isn't Lambeau louder? I do have a theory on that. I don't know if I want to go too much into this right now, but just, I think a big part of it is how much it costs. How much it costs to go to a game. The ticket prices, I mean, they're high. But like, if you're coming in from out of town, it's like tough. With these two-night minimums on the hotel, it's $300. I'm going to the Carolina game later this year. Now, I'm lucky because my sister actually lives in Appleton Darboy, to be exact. So, I don't have to pay for a hotel. But it's fun to look, and I was looking up. I mean, it was like $350 for a night at the Days Inn. What, like, average fan can afford that? That's outrageous. I was there for Throwback Weekend. This is a number of years ago, 2012, I think. My wife and I took a cab from our hotel to the bar where the tweet up was. $25 to go like 4 miles. That was the mandatory minimum. Anywhere from point A to point B in Green Bay. It might be worse now. It's just, it's expensive, man. And like, if you're, you know, you got a family and you're trying to get by, like, I think Lambeau isn't as loud as it could be. Because people go, well, the fans are spoiled. Okay, but I was going to games in the early to mid-2000s, and it was still fairly loud. I mean, it was really loud. And that was when Favre was still the quarterback, and they were racking up wins every year. I didn't see any sort of entitlement or spoiled mindset setting in. I think the price has a lot to do with it, personally. I'm sure people have their own suggestions and their own reasons, and they're, you know what, it's a multitude of factors. It's a bunch of factors. But I think that's a big part of it, sure. They kind of have priced the average guy out. It's hard to go. And I think, you know, with the enhancements in television, 4K TVs and surround sound, and like my TV in the basement has a sound bar on it. I mean, you can create a pretty incredible atmosphere in your home. And if you're an average fan, you're going like, I can do that. If you're the kind of guy like me who would make, no, I go to a game every year. But if you're the kind of guy who's on the fence about it due to the cost, and then you're going, hey, I got this incredible kick-ass setup in my basement, I'm just gonna stay here. There's no lines for the bathroom. It's not $8 a beer. Like, dude, I'm just gonna stay down here. So the price has gotten, the price is part of it, but there's other things. You know, there's a lot of factors. But I don't think Lambeau is, like, dead. As you saw today, it can be loud. Listen to this from Wes Hodkowitz from Packers.com. I'm Chris Lampsis. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk on that, by the way. Kenny Clark, this is from Wes Hodkowitz, Packers.com, tweet. Kenny Clark said Packers D felt the energy from the crowd. The whole entire, quote, the whole entire game, I got back to the sidelines and coaches asked me what Bradbury was saying on the field. I couldn't even tell him what he was saying. I couldn't hear none of the offensive line calls or any of that. Bradbury's the Vikings center. So Kenny Clark heard it. So you did it, Lambeau. You did it, and you just got to keep doing it now. Like I said, I think there's factors why it's not as consistently loud, but it's not dead. You can be loud. Be loud. Do it. It helps. It really does help the defense. So yeah, next week now we got another noon kickoff against the Denver Broncos, who are losing to the Bears. It was 13-3 late in the third quarter when I started recording. I'm not sure what it is now, but that game will be at Lambeau. That should be interesting. That's another tough defense. You know, Von Miller, obviously the headliner there. Their new head coach is Vic Fangio, who has notoriously kind of given Aaron Rodgers fits. during his time as a defensive coordinator in San Francisco and then with the Bears the last few years. So it's going to be another chance for the offense to show growth. And you know what? I want to say this to my fellow Milwaukee people. It's a gold package game, which means the old Milwaukee County Stadium ticket people are getting the tickets for this one. Those are notoriously not great crowds. So as a resident of this city that I love, I am calling for my fellow residents to keep it loud. Don't embarrass us. Don't make us look like jackasses. Keep it loud. Build on what the crowd did today. Carry that moment. They were loud. Now, you know what? You meet that challenge. Raise the bar. Get loud. Scream your faces off. Drink if you have to. I don't care, but be loud. Drink responsibly. But be loud. Okay. And you know what? I think that's it. I think I've said everything I can say about this one. I'll be back next week, obviously, to recap that game. Thank you for listening. I am Chris Lempesis, and this has been Lemp's Talking Pack, coming to you from my bedroom. Go, Pack, go.